from KQED.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. When artist Ed Drew was deployed in Afghanistan, he created tintype photographs of his comrades, the first known use of the 19th century tintype process in a combat zone since the Civil War. Drew's latest work uses the tintype to take photographs of members of the Modoc, Klamath, and Pitt River Paiute tribes of Northern California and Southern Oregon. And his series, Native Portraits, Contemporary Tintypes, is on exhibit at the California Historical Society alongside another exhibit of vintage photographs and news reports from the Modoc War of 1872 that sensationalized Native Americans. We're joined now by Ed Drew and the curator of the exhibits, Aaron Garcia. Welcome to Forum, Aaron Garcia.
Thanks, Mina. Thanks for having us.
And welcome to you, Ed Drew.
Hi, thanks.
Thanks for being here. Ed Drew, you were asked by a tribal mental health worker, is that right, to photograph several intensive talking circles or talking circle weekends. And that's what made up the Native portraits that now are in your exhibition.
Yeah, actually what had happened was I had showed up for a tribal run at a location that they had done this historic tribal run at. And when I was there, I brought some tintype equipment with me under the idea that I would just kind of present myself as a photographer and I would photograph some of the people. A friend of mine was a friend of hers. And so I kind of pitched this idea that I would use my photos as kind of like a healing form of art. And through that, we kind of brainstormed and we came up with the idea, and then she furthered it and added her her job, which is the mental health director.
And healing, because what was the nature of the kinds of conversations that were going on?
It started off as the tribe, specifically the Modoc, I believe, they lost their federal recognition in part because they sold their land and to get money. And it's kind of complicated, but I guess there was a lot of tribal hurt in the fact that they were no longer considered native anymore to the outside world, even though, of course, they are. And there was kind of contention at the time with selling their tribal land. And this wasn't recently. This was in the past. I forget the exact times. I want to say the 60s. But and I'm probably wrong, but regardless, the tribe has had a lot of anguish from what had happened and just in general, just being a native people in America and the continual genocide program the American government has against them is painful for them to deal with. So that's what the work was about, kind of like taking them away from that and placing them back in a time when they were more of a, they had more prestige and they were proud of who they were. And it wasn't just contemporary, like feel bad for them and they're alcoholics or drug addicts or whatever odd stereotypes they have.
Aaron Garcia, what drew you to Ed Drew's work from these talking circles that he photographed?
Yes. Well, we were really excited to meet Ed because he was at the time photographing the Modoc people. And it turns out we have a collection of vintage photographs from the Modoc War of 1872, 1873. And so this gave us a wonderful opportunity to revisit that collection and to also look at it from a kind of fresh contemporary standpoint. So some of the things that Ed talked about, some of the trauma that Ed talked about stems from, you know, as far back as the 1872, 1873 Modoc War. But also he talked a little bit about tribal termination, which occurred in, I believe, the mid-1950s. The Modoc were part of the kind of consolidated Klamath tribes, and that tribe was dissolved essentially in the 1950s. It's been re-recognized, but they don't have lands. And so there is this kind of intergenerational history of trauma with many of the people that Ed photographed. And so we are only able to speak to the Modoc War with our collections, but we thought it was a really interesting opportunity to have a kind of contemporary component and to look back.
Yes, you have these two exhibits side by side, one called Native Portraits, which is a series that Ed Drew did where he's really looking at contemporary Native Americans and trying to put them at the center of their own stories and decisions for how they want to be portrayed. And then right next to it, you have an exhibit called Sensationalist Portrayals of the Modoc War. And as you were talking about the Modoc War, of course, of 1872, this was incredible. I actually learned more about it in researching for this particular segment on Forum, that there was a band of about 60 Native American fighters who held off some 600 U.S. Army troops for several months.
Yes, that's right. It was really quite extraordinary. The Modoc people had been sent to, under a treaty, to the Klamath Reservation, but conditions there deteriorated and they wanted to go back to their ancestral homeland near Tule Lake at the very northern border of California. And in 1870, the settlers there did not really like having the Modoc return to their land. And the government started to try to push them back to the reservation, and they refused to go, and war ensued. Now, the really amazing thing is that for 6 months, about 60 men, as you said, and their families retreated to what is today Lava Beds National Monument, and were able to hold off as many as 600 U.S. Army troops for nearly 6 months. So it's really an extraordinary story. They used the landscape to their advantage. They were able to hide in caves and lava tubes, and keep themselves protected and hidden while the troops had to contend with the, very unmanageable landscape from above. And so it's really an extraordinary story.
And if I'm understanding right, the government had a photographer, commissioned a photographer to take images of this particular war, and that some of that is what's being depicted in the Sensationalist Portrayals exhibit. Can you talk about how those portrayals are distorting or sensationalizing?
Yes. Yeah, so Edward Muybridge, a very famous San Francisco photographer, was sent by the government to photograph the landscape and hopefully help explain to the American public exactly why it was taking so long for them to round up these Native people. And these photographs were then translated through wood engraving into illustrated newspapers at the time. And so it's been very interesting to look at how the newspapers portrayed what was happening in the war. The story of these men, these holdouts, these sort of renegades, sort of captivated the nation, and it was covered widely, even in Europe. And so we see pictures, of the natives. We see actual photographs of people like Captain Jack, the leader of the Modoc people, in dungarees and a calico shirt. But then in the newspaper wood engravings, we see the Modocs as ranging from kind of bare-chested savages wearing feathers to sort of wizened old witch doctors. So we really see this kind of wide array, different portrayals.
And in some cases, the photographs were even staged, correct?
That's right. And in some cases, Warm Spring Indian scouts who were working with the U.S. Army troops were posed and photographed as Modoc warriors, and then those were reproduced in the newspapers as Modocs.
And by comparing this side by side with Ed Drew's photographs of contemporary people of the Modoc, Klamath, and Paiute River tribes, it really makes those distortions clear and almost a little sinister, though I don't know if it was always that in terms of a motive. In some cases, there was some sentimentalizing as well. But
that's true. I think there were humanitarian concerns for the Modocs during the war. Ed's photographs are really wonderful, though, because they play with this notion of history. He's using the tintype process. And also, in many cases, the people he's photographing are holding feathers, or they're wrapped in native-looking blankets. But then you see elements in the photographs, like a contemporary pair of shoes or a hairstyle or a chain-link fence, that remind you that we're looking at contemporary people. So, yeah.
And Ed Drew, you told your subjects to wear whatever they wanted to wear, right? To bring whatever they wanted to bring.
Yeah, I always do that for all of my photos. I want the person themselves to really design their own portrait, and I think it becomes a stronger piece because they have more of a freedom, and that can translate through in the actual portrait itself versus me kind of mannequinizing them and turning them to whatever I feel like they should do. And I think it was really important for this work because of that history of making these the Native people in America and everywhere else in the world pose for these photos so that it could enter people's minds. This is how they are instead of them portraying themselves as how they naturally are.
And I should mention that we have samples of Ed Drew's work on our website at kqed.org/forum. And we also have a link up to the California Historical Society's website where it shows images of both exhibitions. And, of course, the California Historical Society is based here in San Francisco. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org. Post them on Facebook, on Twitter, on our website, kqed.org/forum. We're talking about recent photos taken of the tribes of Klamath Falls using the 19th century tintype process by photographer Ed Drew. And we're also talking with the curator of an exhibit of his photographs at the California Historical Society, Aaron Garcia. Ed Drew, I want to ask you about using the tintype process, even though you're documenting contemporary people or people who are here today. Aaron was talking about the connection to the past, but bringing it into the present. Is that what using the tintype process means to you? Connecting the past to the present?
It's a foil, really. It's kind of, obviously tintypes have that nostalgic American past that people usually dream of the Civil War with. So I kind of use that as a starting point. So I know people are going to think of the Civil War and they're going to think of American nostalgia. And I want that to be maybe the theme of the photo. And from there, I kind of launch off and I have contemporary items inside the photo to help people realize that that is a contemporary photo of a person who is, in fact, living.
You used this process first when you were deployed in Afghanistan, is that right?
Yeah, I used it specifically for the once again, nostalgic past. But I guess for Afghanistan, it was more a broad range of saying that war is timeless. So even if you see an image of a contemporary soldier, putting them in that past kind of frame of reference allows you to kind of see the scope of war as never really changing. The faces might be a little bit different, but, you know, it's always basically always the same.
Was it ever strange for you in looking at the photos? So when I look at a tintype, right, I assume that it is probably from the 19th century, and I assume that the person is likely dead by now. And you're photographing soldiers who are so close to mortality, yet they're alive. Was that ever a feeling that came to you?
Well, they were all guys who I personally know, and they were all people who I flew with. So I was an aerial gunner on search and rescue helicopters, and basically a door gunner. So that mortality thing was something I shared with them. The missions, I wasn't there as a photographer. I was there as a gunner.
Right.
So that connection of mortality, of course, is always going to be there because I know what they're going through, and I was hoping that it would be kind of like an ode to the career, not only the career, but I guess broad range, like what we did as a rescue helicopter guys.
What is it? Is there something also about the process of a tintype that draws you to the medium? One, the physicality of it, but also when you're taking the photo of somebody for a tintype, I understand that they basically have to stand there for about a minute or so. Or even longer?
Minute would be on the long side, and that's probably if you were indoors. I'd say more like 10 seconds was usually, if you have a lot of bright light and you're outside, 10 seconds in the shade would be the best guesstimate. As far as why I did them or why I used them, it's actually kind of interesting because my reasons have changed from the first time I did them. Back then, it was kind of a novelty almost for me. It was like something new. And now that I've done them for so long, it's become more of a – I actually like the process itself, the steps behind doing it because I was in the military for so long. That kind of procedure actually is comforting for me.
We're talking with Ed Drew. He is a photographer, and actually he will be at the exhibit at the California Historical Society in San Francisco. I understand. Will you be appearing at some point soon or no? I'm sorry.
Yeah, November 3rd, I believe.
November 3rd is the date that you'll be there. I have it down here as November 27th, and I was just realizing that's when the exhibit runs through. So it runs all the way through to November 27th.
Correct, yes. November 3rd is when I actually have a conversation with a very brilliant Native American tintype. Not a tintype. Actually, he's a wet plate collodion. I think he uses glass plates mostly, photographer. And so I guess we're going to be having a conversation and talking about our experiences and different points of view.
And if you'd like to talk to Ed Drew, give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org, post them on Facebook, on Twitter, or on our website, kqed.org/forum. You can also talk with Aaron Garcia, the managing curator of exhibitions at the California Historical Society. Aaron Garcia, we talked a little bit about the sensationalist portrayals and how they were sensationalized, but what kind of narrative do you think the folks were trying to create for the rest of the U.S. and how has it changed, or has it been, you know, pretty stubborn and stuck with us for some time?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, at the time, in that 6-month-long period during the Modoc War, I think public opinion and even the journalists that were writing about the war had a kind of sympathy or empathy for these people that were hiding out in the lava beds. But that changed as the events unfolded. Unfortunately, the Modocs killed a U.S. general. He was General Canby. He was the only U.S. general killed in an Indian conflict. After that event, that was during peace negotiations. And so after that event, the policy toward the Modoc people, to the Modocs, you know, resistors, changed drastically. They were essentially to be eradicated, and public opinion changed, government opinion changed, and so they ultimately were rounded up. 4 of them were executed, and you know, the story went on. It was a very sensational story, and it went on. It's been reproduced in novels, in many, many fictional accounts. I think Alan Ladd's Drumbeat, I think that's the name of the film. You know, there have been many fictionalized accounts that are based on the Modoc War. And, you know, many of them stray far from the truth of what happened. And so it's, you know, I think the story was overshadowed a bit by subsequent Indian conflicts, but at the time it was a very, very big story. It was very big news. And I think it's been, you know, in some ways largely forgotten and turned into a kind of, you know, popular cowboy and Indian tale.
And if there's something that you would want folks to get out of the experience of touring both exhibits, what is it that you'd like them to recognize or understand?
Yeah, well, I really think that, you know, in bringing Ed's contemporary work together with some of the historical material, it gave us this really fantastic opportunity to make history relevant today. And I really hope people take history in, you know, into the future. You know, it is relevant for the future. And, you know, we have so many conversations about this nation and especially the state of California as a place of immigrants. You know, we're a country of immigrants. But in fact, that's only part of the story. It's actually more complicated than that. We're mostly immigrants, but there are Native people here. And so just to think about the various different perspectives that we all have and to take those sort of things forward.
Well, Jordan writes, and this is a question for you, Ed Drew, how does the artist reconcile the conflict between, as the artist describes, a government genocide, tribal termination on Native peoples, and the artist's personal history as a veteran?
I think that's a question that it's actually pretty good.
It's a great question.
Yeah, I never really know how to think of that. It's certainly something that always surfaces in my mind. It's am I part of that machine? Am I implicit in this continuation of the government's programs? I think I could I mitigate it by thinking first that I'm half black, half Puerto Rican, so I've got that history, I guess, of the government and being in the United States as my particular race never actually being a great thing. You know, the past has always been pretty difficult. So I work from there, and I'm like, well, I don't know if I'm actually part of that system anyway to begin with. And then I think, well, maybe I'm inside this government machine, if you will, and it's, for lack of a better term, I'm really kind of caught off guard with this. But yeah, I think I'm working from within to change, to affect that change. Like, I have a knowing, knowledgeable understanding of how the government works, at least part of the government, so I can say, like, qualified, yeah, this is how it is, and I want to make it different. And I think that's the biggest, that and my race are the two biggest things that help me to reconcile when I do projects.
What you're saying makes me think of another question that I was wondering, which was, the camera was basically a tool of distorting and even sensationalizing or even exploitation for the Native Americans of the Modoc tribe, you know, in the 1800s. And now you're using it as a tool, right, to I don't want to say empower, because that's not really the right word, but to allow people to determine their own, you know, their own portrayal. What's that like for you, those dual purposes?
I do think it's empowerment to allow them to dictate what their image will look like, because formerly it's always been people are telling them. And the weirdest part about making this work was in the back of my mind, especially as an artist, I don't really see myself as a photographer, but more of as an artist. And I think the difference is conceptual nature, where I'm coming from whenever I make these images. I just happen to use photography as my medium. Conceptually, within my mind, I'm thinking these people are also victims of the stereotypes. So they're also, like, kind of following these stereotypes, as far as what a Native person is. And when I take my camera and when I make these images and I'm looking at them through the lens, that always floats around in the back of my mind. And I'm hoping that maybe the honesty within my own work, past, present, and hopefully in the future, when I talk to these people while I'm making these photos, helps them to understand the what I'm doing exactly. And I always make it clear that it's empowerment. I want them to feel proud of who they are, and it also is a matter of fact that I want them to understand that they are people. They are not Native American and then you know, Yana. It's your Yana first, and then your Native American, and then you're whatever tribe you belong to. And I think that's really important.
And Yana means?
Yana's the girl's name.
Oh, one of the
people. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That was an example.
Okay.
That was actually one of the people.
Christine asks, I'd like to know, what does tintype photography capture that would not be revealed with modern photography technology?
Wow. I'm laughing because, like I told you before, it actually changed my understanding of tintype photography and my interaction with it. As an artist, I realized that the only thing that's special about tintypes right now is that they look different. Since we're essentially a society and culture that is just inundated with images all the time. And, you know, now we have the iPhones and the cellular phones, and so we're constantly taking photos. The reality is that they just look different than what you're used to seeing. And as time went on and the images became somewhat of a commonplace for me, that separation of them being special went away. And then they just became an image. And that actually helped me, because then it became more about what's in the image and what are the messages and the concepts and the conceptual nature of my art that I'm trying to portray. And so it's not just a picture. It actually has meaning to it.
And Aaron Garcia.
Yeah, I'd just like to add that, you know, one of the things that is really different about the tintype is that it does take a little bit longer for Ed to make. It's not just a quick, you know, snap and grab kind of picture. Ed has to work a great deal with the people he's photographing. And the process itself, Ed, you're not giving yourself enough credit, I don't think, is pretty labor intensive. And it means that you spend a good deal of time with the people you're photographing, and they have to stay still for you for, even though it may only be 10 seconds, that's quite a long time compared to how, you know, contemporary iPhone snapshot works.
That's true.
I think there is a kind of more of a collaboration in making a tintype. And that, you know, that plays into how Ed is sort of coping with or grappling with some of the issues surrounding what it means to take a picture of a native person, you know, historically, from a historical standpoint.
Yeah, Drew.
That's a good point. I'm always stuck in my head with these processes. And so for me, it's like I've done it so many times that it's kind of like second nature that I'm just making this photo and I've got to get it done. And I mean, Aaron kind of nailed it with the idea that I am spending more time with him, it's not just a quick snapshot. And I think that is important to point out, that I have to really interact on a human level with these people. And so I see that beyond the actual photo process and more the artistic process, because I'm doing like this kind of transfer of thoughts and human ideas.
Well, we have just 30 seconds left, Ed, but I do want to just get in this last question. Is there something from Robert who writes, is there something about the speed of the imaging medium, restrictions on depth of field, grain of the image, response to natural light, and so forth, that appeals to Mr. Drew? Are there special differences from other historical processes such as platinotype? I'm going to butcher that especially appeal. How does he escape from the simple aspect of old-timiness that using such a medium might involve? And I'm sorry, we do just have 30 seconds.
You know what? It just looks different for me. And I think that's what's really the first thing that grabs me. And then the aesthetics thing. I really like the aesthetics of shallow depth of field and the sepia tones and whatnot. So, it's an evolving thing. And I just honestly like it a lot, just the look.
Well, we have, again, samples of Ed Drew's work on our website at kqed.org/forum, and we have a link up to the California Historical Society's website where their exhibition is on display through November 27th. Thank you, Ed Drew, for talking with us.
Thank you.
And thanks to you, Aaron Garcia, for coming in as well.
Thanks very much.
Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Judy Campbell, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, and our intern is Maxine Schofer-Wolf. I'm Mina Kim. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.